Putting restrictions on the travel of human has also put restrictions on the travel in the movement of goods and services.
COVID-19 travel restrictions to the U.S. end. It's Tuesday, November 9th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, medically assisted dying legal in New Zealand. Questioning gun use on Hollywood sets in wake of fatal shooting accident. New York City Marathon comeback. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Travel restrictions to the U.S. put in place during the pandemic have ended after more than a year and a half. On Monday, travelers from around the world can resume flights to the U.S. as long as they are vaccinated. The changes will impact travelers from the EU, China, Brazil, and India, among others. VOA's Arash Arabisadi spoke with an economist who explains what this means.
Bhavna Patel has been a grandmother for more than a year. She lives in London, but because of travel restrictions due to the pandemic, she's never met her grandson, who lives in New York. Starting Monday, travel restrictions from Britain and several other countries end for vaccinated passengers. Patel can hardly wait. She spoke from her home with Reuters.
I want to wear a badge. I'm going to see my grandson. I'm going to, I want a big hat or something. I'm going to see my grandson.
Patel is just one of millions of people who were unable to travel to the U.S. for more than a year and a half. The pandemic restrictions have taken a toll on the U.S. economy in more sectors than just travel and leisure. Todd Knoop is a professor of economics and business at Cornell College. He tells VOA travel restrictions had some unexpected effects.
As people have traveled less and traveled more, it's played a big role in influencing energy prices and other prices of raw materials. And that then, of course, filters into almost every aspect of the economy.
Professor Todd Knoop says a strong tourism industry inside the U.S. has kept sectors from struggling as much as in other countries that rely heavily on foreign tourism.
Putting restrictions on the travel of human has also put restrictions on the travel in the movement of goods and services. And so in a increasingly globalized economy, at least an economy that was increasingly globalized up to 18 months ago, that has just led to a lot of, I would say, unanticipated bottlenecks.
Bottlenecks like the backup of cargo ships at the key ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles. Ships wait for days to offload their cargo at the congested ports on the West Coast where most products from China enter the U.S. Knoop says supply chain issues will likely have a bigger impact on the economy than travel as the country heads into the holiday shopping season.
A year ago, it was the travel industry that was suffering, but we had positive effects on the supply side from lower energy. Now we're kind of in the exact opposite situation where higher energy prices and supply chain issues are slowing the economy down. But on the demand side, things are strong.
Still, for travelers like Bhavna Patel, the only news that matters is her upcoming flight.
Like, if I could dance, I would dance.
On Monday, the U.S. will also open its land borders with Mexico and Canada to vaccinated travelers. Arash Arabisadi, VOA News.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. China builds mock-ups of U.S. Navy ships in area used for missile target practice. Top U.S. diplomat calls for return to genuine and inclusive democracy in Myanmar. Experts fear new Hong Kong doxing law will punish opposition. India's latest Zika outbreak sees surge of nearly 100 cases. U.S. envoy starts trip to discuss way forward on crisis hit Afghanistan. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Medically assisted dying is now legal in New Zealand. The End of Life Choice Act has come into effect 1 year after almost two-thirds of New Zealanders voted in favor of it. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Supporters believe the assisted dying laws will give New Zealanders who are suffering terribly at the end of their lives choice, compassion and dignity. To be eligible, a person must have a terminal illness that's likely to end their life within 6 months. They must also be able to make an informed decision. The legislation came into force Sunday, a year after a binding referendum. Brooke Van Velden is the deputy leader of the small ACT New Zealand party, which promoted the voluntary euthanasia law. She told Radio New Zealand the measures will benefit the South Pacific country of 5 million people.
This weekend, New Zealand became a kinder, more compassionate and humane society for allowing people who are struggling and suffering in those last few days with their terminal illness choice and compassion on how and when they go.
However, some critics insist that patients with chronic conditions might feel obliged to use euthanasia to avoid being a burden on their families. They also believe that inadequate palliative care services need to be better resourced so that terminally ill patients receive better care. Some senior church leaders have said that while they oppose the deliberate taking of human life, they would still offer care and advice to those who chose assisted dying under the new laws. The government has appointed three experts, including a medical ethicist, to monitor the legislation. New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said she voted yes in the referendum last year on voluntary euthanasia and the legalisation of recreational cannabis. New Zealand joins a small group of countries, including the Netherlands and Canada, which allow euthanasia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In other news, Australia's top diplomat met Monday with Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen on issues including the coronavirus pandemic during the second stop of her four-nation Southeast Asian tour. A spokesman for the Cambodian premier said Foreign Minister Maryse Payne exchanged views with her host on trade and Australia's provision of assistance to Cambodia in the education, health, agriculture, and defense sectors. Payne mentioned during the talks that Australia will provide 3.5 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine to Cambodia, with 1.5 million doses set to arrive by the end of this year, the spokesman added. Australia in February announced a separate grant of $28 million for Cambodia to purchase 3 million doses. Happening now in Asia, the Taliban-run Afghan Public Health Ministry announced Sunday the start of a four-day nationwide polio vaccination campaign aimed at inoculating children younger than five. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the recent fatal shooting accident on the set in New Mexico of Alec Baldwin's movie Rust has prompted calls for a ban on the use of real guns in TV shows and films. Jenny Adulo in Los Angeles spoke with a master armorer who has been in the film industry for over 30 years about safety on movie sets. Here's her report for VOA.
Mike Tristano is what Hollywood calls a master armorer. For over three decades, Tristano has worked on Hollywood movie sets as the person responsible for the safe use of all kinds of weapons used in a film. This is a Colt revolver. It's the same kind of gun used in the shooting accident in October that resulted in the death of cinematographer Halina Hutchins and the wounding of director Joel Souza on the set of Alec Baldwin's movie Rust. Tristano says live ammunition should have never found its way onto the set.
How come those guns weren't checked? I mean, our guns get checked, you know, before they're brought out of the truck, they're checked several times. Then we get them to the set, we check them again. And they're checked usually by multiple armors because usually you're doing a show that's big enough to have at least two people.
On top of that, Tristano adds, guns should have never been left unattended on the movie set, as apparently was the case on the set of Rust. The deadly shooting accident has revived calls for a ban on live ammunition on sets. New York film director Bandar Al-Baloui even posted an online petition that now has over 100,000 signatures.
It's going to end. I mean, yeah, you can make movies that feature guns, bam, 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 your little cowboy movies, but guess what? You're not going to be using real guns with live ammunition.
Film director and producer Russell Duncan, who is based in Los Angeles, says that the second a gun appears on screen, the plot line immediately becomes more dramatic. Yet, despite this effect, he does not use live ammunition.
So I would put the blanks in, like most movies do, put the blanks in and on the computer, on visual effects. So you could have an empty gun, a plastic gun, a fake gun, whatever, and the guy could be like this. As long as the actor looks like he's firing, you put the blank there, you know, the CGI effect there, the muzzle flash, and then put the sound in post, and then it looks real.
But Tristano believes computer-generated gunfire negatively affects the quality of the movie.
I don't know how people feel, but I look at that when I see it done, and to me it looks terrible. It looks very fake. The flashes look like photo flashes. The shell ejection doesn't look correct. And on a period piece, I don't care what anyone says, you cannot duplicate smoke from black powder rounds on camera. It looks terrible.
Tristano points out that gun accidents on movie sets are rare, but overall safety on the set remains an issue. The Associated Press reported in 2016 there have been over 40 deaths on Hollywood sets since 1990 and over 150 life-altering injuries. Most are from stunts gone wrong. Jenya Dulo for VOA News, Los Angeles.
In space news, Wang Yaping has become the first Chinese woman to conduct a spacewalk as part of a six-month mission to the country's space station. Fellow astronaut Zai Zigang left the station's main module on Sunday evening, and Wang followed later. The Chinese manned space agency says they installed equipment and carried out tests alongside the station's robotic service arm. The spacewalk lasted until early Monday. The third member of the crew assisted from inside the station, CMS said on its website. The three are the second crew on the permanent station. And the mission that began with their October 16th arrival is scheduled to be the longest stretch of time in space for Chinese astronauts. Three spacewalks are planned to install equipment in preparation for the station's expansion, while the crew will also assess living conditions in the module and conduct experiments in space medicine and other fields. China's military-run space program plans to send multiple crews to the station over the next 2 years. The world's largest marathon was canceled last year because of the COVID-19 pandemic, so this year's race represented a comeback in more ways than one. 33,000 runners returned to the streets of New York City for the 50th New York City Marathon. With its return, spectators were happy to see the crowds returning. In a city where more than 34,000 have died of COVID-19, organizers hoped for an uplifting celebration akin to the marathon staged 2 months after the 9/11 attacks. VOA's Tina Trin reports from New York.
If there was one word to describe the day, it would be comeback.
It feels great. It's so good to be around people now.
The New York City Marathon was officially back after the coronavirus pandemic forced its cancellation last year. And Ramada was one of the estimated million-plus fans who turned out to cheer more than 30,000 runners from all over the world as they hit the streets, covering 42 kilometers across the boroughs of Staten Island, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, and Manhattan.
So we're really sad that there wasn't one last year, so we're just so happy that it's back. And we're here rooting for Kenya.
She wouldn't be disappointed, as Kenyans took first place in both the men's and women's races. 28-year-old Paris Jepchirchir crossed the finish line in 2 hours, 22 minutes, and 39 seconds, and became the first athlete to win both the Olympic gold and the New York City Marathon in the same year.
I'm feeling great. I'm so happy. I'm so happy.
On the men's side, 27-year-old Albert Carrier finished with a time of 2:08:22, a gratifying comeback after placing second in the 2019 New York City Marathon.
I didn't imagine that I will win today. This was how my training going, and this is the results.
But perhaps the biggest comeback of the day belonged to the city itself and to marathon fans who witnessed the return of a New York City tradition known around the world. Eva was a marathon spectator.
It's great to be back. We look forward to coming out here every year. It's a lot of fun. Great crowd. New York City is a great crowd.
This man, Jim, was another spectator.
It's just great to see everybody out. And New York's back, isn't it?
Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
The field was shrunk by about 40% this year to help keep runners distanced, and participants had to provide proof of vaccination or a negative COVID-19 test within 48 hours of race day. You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Coscale, Jessica Stone, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.